Noah Vauter is a research assistant and PhD candidate at the MIT Media Lab. He's also the inventor of a portable listening device called Ambient Edition. New York Times describes Vauter's invention as the Ambient Walkman. Ambient Edition consists of a pair of headphones equipped with small microphones and speakers. A tiny digital signal processing chip analyzes the surrounding noises and converts them into a form of music. Noah Vauter explains how Ambient Edition works.
In this case, it really has two halves. You know, one standard model of music might be a combination of harmony, melody, and rhythm. And I found, you know, I did this as a master's thesis project, so for the purposes of the project, it was the most straightforward to implement rhythm and harmonic manipulations initially.
So you take percussive sounds, those are the easiest to deal with, and change the rhythm of them or create a repetitive rhythm using that, a drum bass?
Exactly. For example, one of the sounds that, at least up here, I encounter most is hand carts, like being unloaded from a truck. Uh-huh. You know, they tend to be empty and, you know, the person pulling them out of the truck tends to yank them and they go bouncing and they hit the ground and just rattle. So that would register in the device as a transient sound. And in isolation, you know, I feel, you know, a lot of this reflects my personal preferences, by the way. So, of course, the field of music is much more broad. But generally, a single drum hit in isolation sounds unresolved. So I'll make a recording. You know, I'm not actually taking the sound, I'm more reflecting it and reproducing it. And I'll put it into a rhythmic sequence so that there's some continuity to it. And it was my thesis that this sort of continuity would be an addition to the surrounding world that makes it just a little more soothing and bearable.
So the initial recording sound would be absolutely recognizable. If you played it, I'd know what it is. But what happens to it then? Does it change in the way you perceive it because it's repeated and sent back to you and put into a different format?
Yeah, and the effects are highly subjective. I will say that for me, at least, they tended to be humorous. And sometimes they play in the space between your memory and what's around you, or even your anticipation, you know, as any music tends to do. For example, one of the very first things I noticed when I was just testing it out, I looked across the street, you know, I put the thing on my head, and I was looking for sounds to hear how they would be transformed. And I was disappointed when I didn't hear a door close processed through the machine. So I took off the headphones and I watched the door close again, and I realized, like, I couldn't actually hear it anyway. I'd just been sort of anticipating it or imagining it.
Yeah, so actually this is in part the music that's created in your head, even though the machine is sending it to you. You have to participate.
Yeah.
Well, in a way then, what you're doing is using this device to engage yourself more in the sounds that are around you in the street.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say engage yourself more. Yeah, it wasn't my initial thesis. My initial thesis would be it would, I thought it would put you in contact with things. And I was surprised at the effect of it carrying you in toward yourself. It actually becomes a little more difficult, I believe, to interact with the world. You're essentially distracted by music. Your behavior will look unusual to people.
Right? Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody these days knows about sound reduction headphones. You get noise that is generated to kind of mask the sounds that are going on around. In a sense, you're doing the opposite. You're taking the sounds that are going on around you and creating something new. And is that what inspired you to create this? What was the idea when you decided that you wanted to try this?
It was to resolve incomplete melodies. What I heard is incomplete melodies surrounding me.
The noises in the street were incomplete melodies to you?
Yes, particularly the brakes of a bus.
Does your algorithm take the musical, I mean, does it look for a pitch in the sounds in the street and then work with that?
I would love for it to, and my whole thesis, the latter half of it is some pontifications about how much further you could go. But for now, it's a little more transparent in its intelligence. It produces transposed versions of what you hear around you, but they're relative. It doesn't have any specific ideas that it seeks for example. I had some original ideas to maybe look for the sound of a police siren, for example, and treat that one specifically, but it doesn't do anything like that.
Of course, you're talking about a tiny device at this point, no larger than an MP3 player, and you can't expect it to compose music, which is, I guess, what I was talking about.
I guess it depends on your definition of music. You know, even as we talk about composing music, we're talking about the listener composing it as they're listening as well. Also with their movements and, you know, their wanderings, they're composing the scene in that way. Other people have written about how conventional Walkman listeners regulate the volume to conform to the experience that they're creating for themselves.
In your thesis, you write that the kind of portable devices we know, the iPods and the Walkman and so forth, create social isolation. Can you explain to me, is that you just mean that people cut themselves off by listening to music instead of having a conversation?
Yeah, and I think, you know, some of the interesting critiques since I've written the thesis have come in that area of the debate about whether acoustic isolation leads to the social isolation. I think there really was a concrete moment in time that I was responding to when I was talking about that. It refers to, believe it or not, September 11th. I realized that there's a sort of palpable mood when you walk down a street. And obviously the mood then was one of mourning. And then since then, I realized that there are other moods. For example, if you're walking down the street and two people are telling a joke and the punchline comes and everybody laughs, then that gives you an indication of the mood of the street, and you know it's somewhat of a safety zone. But if you're listening to music, trying to create your own artificial safety zone, then you're one level removed from what everybody else is doing. So, you know, it could lead to increased tension or something like that. So I had the idea that you didn't have to completely remove yourself from what's going on around you. You might still pick up the laughter through the device. And if the laughter comes out in a different pitch, or if it's repeated as it's sampled and played as a rhythm, then you may re-experience it several times. So you maintain a little less of a tenuous connection with what's around you.
Because I was just thinking about listening to a CD this morning as I was driving into work and laughing my head off at one point. And of course, people in other cars would have no idea what this maniac was doing.
Yeah, it's true. Well, that's sort of one of the fun things about this is when you stop censoring, at least in the context of this is an art project, you temporarily suspend your overt expression of what you're doing. You know, we no longer dance every single time we hear music. Sometimes we just listen as we roll down the street. But this has created at least a temporary kind of inhibition for me and for many people. I mean, they're just funny stories. My favorite is walking around in New York City, just following my ears. I wandered right into the space of a sort of manic street preacher. And everybody else had been maintaining, like I was talking about, that sort of safe distance from the person, from using their eyes or responding to the content of his message. And that content through the device is a little bit obscured, what with the rhythms and the transposition and stuff. So I got really close to him before I started using my eyes and looked him eye to eye. And he just handed me one of his business cards and slipped it right into my pocket. And I realized, wow, he could have just slipped my wallet right out with that pocket. There was that. I've caught myself singing along with the thing, trying to hit the notes exactly, because it's got a lot of narrow band filters. So you can sort of practice singing along with it. If your pitch isn't right on, then you might not hear it so well.
Does it affect the way you interact with your environment?
Oh, yeah, yeah. One of my favorite papers ever is called Defensible Spaces. And this introduces the concept of an overlay, a visual overlay around all the property and land surrounding you, all the space. It divides it into private, semi-private, public, semi-public, etc. And I think that I, and probably many people, use these as sort of guides to figure out where we're going to go when we're walking down the street. But when you set out to just listen and to take in the variety of sound, then I think your borders are going to be different. For example, I found myself tempted to wander around on neighbors' porches. You know, I'll see a chair up there, and I'll say, like, I wonder what it's like if I just whack that chair with a stick and I listen to that sound and I listen to it. Or, you know, I'll touch a fence. You tend to bang things together to make the world into some music concrete.
Noah Vauter is the inventor of ambient addition,